We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata, verse 20. Verse 20 is not a verse. It's prose. So let's go through the word for word, and then we'll read the prose. Shishuka Uvacha. Shishuka Dev Goswami said, Iti, thus, Samabhihita, completely instructed, Mahabhagavata, the great devotee, Bhagavata, of the most powerful Lord Brahma, Tribhuvana, of the three worlds, Guru, the spiritual master, Anushasanam, the order, Atmana, of himself, Lagutaya, because of inferiority, Avanata, bowed down, Shirodara, his head, Badham, yes sir, Iti, thus, Sabahumanam, with great respect, Uvaham, carried out. So the verse goes like this. Let's see how to do this. Shishuka Uvacha Iti Samabhito Mahabhagavato Bhagavatastri Bhuvanagurur Anushasanamatmano Lagutayavat. Lagutaya vanata shirodana badhamiti sabahumanam uvaha. Hare Krishna. No. Translation. Oh, anyone else want to chant it? Okay, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, after thus being fully instructed by Lord Brahma, who is the spiritual master of the three worlds, Priyavrata, his own position being inferior, offered obeisances, accepted the order, and carried it out with great respect. Purport. Sri Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma. Therefore, according to social etiquette, his position was inferior. It is the duty of the inferior to carry out the order of the superior with great respect. Priyavrata therefore immediately said, yes, sir, I shall carry out your order. Priyavrata is described as a Mahabhagavata, a great devotee. The duty of a great devotee is to carry out the order of the spiritual master, or the spiritual master of the spiritual master in the parampara system. As described in Bhagavad Gita 4:2, evam parampara praptam, one has to receive the instructions of the Supreme Lord through the disciplic chain of spiritual masters. A devotee of the Lord always considers himself a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And so ends Srila Prabhupada's purport. Again, the translation, Shishugata Goswami continued, after thus being fully instructed by Lord Brahma, who is the spiritual master of the three worlds, Priyavrata, his own position being inferior, offered obeisance, accepted the order, and carried it out with great respect. In this way, Sukadev is to a close this narrative, how Lord Brahma has persuaded Priyavrata to, as Prabhupada would say, do the needful, to not go rushing off to the forest just yet, but rather to take up duties and rule the kingdom, rule the world. And it says here that he does so quite willingly. He accepts Badham. Next time the temple commander comes to you with an order, you can say Badham. So he accepted, and he accepted cheerfully, it seems. He didn't accept, but internally harbor some resentment. He actually accepted thoroughly. The verse, which is not exactly a verse, includes the word anushasanam, so I thought I'll look up this word and see if we can say a bit more about it. If we look in the dictionary, we see that it comes from anushas. Prabhupada speaks of the shas dhatu, the verbal root, which has to do with ruling and controlling, and he explains the word shastra is related to this, but also the word shastra. And he says, if we don't follow shastra, then we will be controlled by shastra. If we don't follow scripture, we'll be controlled by weapons. The prefix anu suggests either ongoing or following. So in this case, both, we might say, following order and ongoing following of order. In any case, we have in the dictionary that anushas means to rule or govern, and it can also mean to order, but also to teach. So Brahma is, in his ordering, he's also teaching, isn't he? To teach, to direct, to advise, also to address, and to punish, to chastise and correct. So all these meanings are there, all bundled up in this word anushasanam. We find this word also elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, so I looked up to see where else we find it. One place we find is in the discussion between Krishna and Arjuna about Ashwatthama. What do we do with this rascal, Ashwatthama, who has done terrible things? He has murdered the five sons of the Pandavas, the Pandaveyas they're called. And he must be punished. He must be punished, but then again, he is a son of a Brahmin. So this is a special consideration. And Krishna is telling Arjuna, you have to satisfy Draupadi, who is the mother of the Pandavas. And so naturally, she is profoundly affected by what has happened. You have to satisfy her, and you have to satisfy me. And it turns out that both were giving exactly, apparently, opposite orders. Surprisingly, of course, Draupadi was saying, don't kill him. Very surprisingly. But not so surprisingly to the devotees who understand, she is a Bhagavata, or Mahabhagavata herself, and therefore she feels compassion for the mother of Ashwatthama. She says, why should yet another person cry? So, on the other hand, Krishna is saying he must be killed. He is an aggressor. What should Arjuna do? Well, he finds a way to satisfy both, as we know, a kind of outcasting of Ashvatthama, which involves a sort of social death. In traditional Indian culture, you want to kill someone without killing the body, just outcast them, throw them out of the out of their family. In the Mahabharata, incidentally, there's kind of different way this is represented. It says that Lord Krishna cursed Ashvatthama to wander alone for 3,000 years. So also there, he's not killed. Another place where Anushasanam comes up is in the discussion between Kali and Parikshit. As we know, Kali has been making mischief, harassing innocent living beings, the cows, the bulls. Maharaj Parikshit comes along and wants to kill him. He deserves to be killed, and yet he has submitted himself to Maharaj Parikshit. He says, "I surrender. Now, where can I go?" He says, "Get out of my kingdom. There is no other place beyond your kingdom." You have a point there, because Maharaj Parikshit's kingdom was the entire earth. What's he supposed to do? Fly to the moon or something? No, there's no space. So you're banishing me from your kingdom, but there's no space. There's no place other than your kingdom. Where to go? So at this point, Kali requests Maharaj Parikshit, fix me a place where I can live under your rule. Atishtante anushasanam. So here the word anushasanam is indicating the first of these meanings of ruling or governing. So Maharaj Parikshit is governing the world. Kali is looking for a place in it. Another example, another case we have is Krishna speaking to Kaliya. Kaliya has also made trouble. He has spoiled the environment of the Yamuna. The Kaliya Daha in the Yamuna, still to this day called Kaliya Daha, although there's no more Daha there, to my knowledge. Lake has disappeared, dried up. All poisoned, everything, the whole, everywhere around poison. Why? Because because of who he is, his very nature. He breathes toxic poisons. What to do? Krishna goes, he jumps in, and he has a nice, fun dancing fight with Kaliya in such a way that Kaliya is blessed on all of his hoods with the lotus feet of the Lord. And as we know, the wives of Kaliya come and offer their prayers in great appreciation. This person, this our husband, has been so fortunate to have received the feet, your lotus feet, on his head. Normally, to be kicked in the head is not considered a blessing. Nor is it to be kicked in the chest, as Shivananda Sena was, by whom? By Nityananda Prabhu. That's normally not, wouldn't be. But Shivananda Sena thought, oh, I am so blessed. Shivananda Sena's wife thought, oh, what an insult. The same act interpreted in different ways by different people. So we as devotees learn to interpret the blessings of the Lord even when they may appear to be a kick in the head as a blessing. In any case, at this time, let's see, how does it go? Krishna says, one who remembers. Okay, at the end of this account, then Krishna says, one who remembers my command to you, to Kaliya, namely to leave the ocean, to leave and go to the ocean, and who narrates this account morning and evening, will never be afraid of Kaliya. Joy! That's good to know. You may have been afraid of Kaliya, but now you know how not to be afraid of Kaliya. It's an interesting footnote to this. I was just reading. I received a gift yesterday of the Sri Krishna Vijaya of Gunaraj Khan, which Srila Prabhupada recommends to read as being very simple, sublime Bengali. So this was an English translation, but it's a summary of the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, written before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And I just was glancing at one page of this yesterday, describing this pastime, and it mentions an interesting detail. Do you want to hear this detail? That after Kaliya was chastised by Krishna, Kaliya offered many, many jewels and ornaments to Lord Krishna, so that when he returned back to the bank of the Yamuna, he was all dressed up. He had so many more ornaments, just like Nityananda, after he preached to one group, one community village of goldsmiths and gold dealers. He came out from this preaching covered in gold ornaments. People thought, what is this? The renunciant Avaduta. Yes, he's Avaduta, therefore he can even wear gold, no problem. It's also mentioned that as Kaliya left the Yamuna and went to the ocean, also millions of other snakes also left and went away to some other places. Aren't you glad? So there's nothing to be afraid of if you remember this about Kaliya. And the anushasanam of Krishna to the order for him to go away. Let's see, what else, other points I wanted to make. Yes, regarding the response of Priyavrata, he's really quite ready to accept this order. And there's a term for this we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, akrita droha. Non-defiance, it's one of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava, to be non-defiant. All of us as conditioned souls tend to be defiant when someone comes and imposes upon us, or we feel they're imposing something upon us that we don't want to do, isn't it? Have you had this experience? So one of the Vaishnav qualities is akrita droha, non-defiance. And what is that non-defiance? It means a spirit of submissiveness. And I think it's something, maybe I'm not the only one to experience here, is that if you go ahead and surrender, even though you initially may not like something, at some point you find, oh, this is actually very nice. Srila Prabhupada tells of himself and his experience of resisting surrender. Did you know that? He had a dream. He was told by his Guru Maharaj, you should take sannyas. He woke up in a cold sweat. Well, I don't know. He doesn't say cold sweat. But anyway, something like that. He says he was shocked. And he didn't know what to think. And then when the dream came a second time, oh, now what to do about this? Well, he eventually accepted the order. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. I think another interesting example of this from within our ISKCON society is with respect to the late His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami, who had been in charge of the Radha Damodar party. I suppose you were involved at that time. And apparently there was some kind of politics about his being in charge. And he went to Srila Prabhupada to discuss, you know, how to deal with this. And he felt apparently there was kind of no solution. So at one point he commented casually to Srila Prabhupada, "Maybe I should just go to China." The next day, I think it was, next morning, Prabhupada called Tamal Krishna Goswami into his room and said, "I want you to go to China, to preach in China." TKG said, "Prabhupada, I was just joking." And Prabhupada said, "Vaishnavas don't joke." Hare Krishna. So be careful what you say, especially to your guru in a joking mood. He might take it seriously. In both cases, Srila Prabhupada and then later Tamal Krishna Maharaj, having accepted the order, then of course they came into their service in wonderful ways. And we see how then the Lord empowered them. I can say also about myself, I think also we all have experience of sometimes being asked to do something and being surprised by that request, really not expecting it to come. My own one example from now, it's some years ago, when I thought I was finished with some university teaching after 1 year, came back to Oxford just to get a phone call. "How would you like to come to Hong Kong to teach?" "Hong Kong? What do you mean, Hong Kong?" Anyway, after some further discussion, let's say, got used to the idea and gave up my defiance. And I don't know if I can say I surrendered, but somehow, yeah, I took it up. And it's been quite nice. One of the things that keeps us from surrender is perhaps in our Western culture, there's a very high value put on the notion of autonomy. That we are somehow or other autonomous beings. There's an interesting expression has been suggested by one contemporary scholar, Charles Taylor, speaks of the buffered self. You know the word buffer? To sort of have a buffer zone. So we all, aside from just being conditioned souls and therefore pursuing our autonomy, I would say in our Western culture and now with our globalized culture, there's such a high premium put on autonomy that this works also against us in our individual experience of pursuing the path of bhakti. And also it works very much against others who we approach with our preaching, with our invitations to take up Krishna bhakti, because people have a very highly tuned sense of my autonomy is being threatened. Someone is imposing themselves, him or herself or whatever, upon me, and I will not allow it. No! And so people reject out of hand. This is a challenge for us to encourage people to say, actually, surrender is a nice thing. And it's not only a nice thing, it's a recognition of the reality. What's the reality? We are not autonomous. We are we're not independent. We are dependent. And in fact, it makes a lot of sense, rather than declaring independence as one country from which I grew up, thought they did, as Rasamandala told me the other day, you thought, he was speaking to me as American, he said, you thought you were getting rid of us, the British, but actually we were getting rid of you. Anyway, this idea of independence, it's so obvious to devotees that we are not independent, isn't it? Well, in this verse that we're reading today, there's an emphasis on hierarchy also in the purport, that Lord Brahma is the not the father, the grandfather, and the etiquette is to recognize and acknowledge this. And how one acknowledges is one accepts the order. And that makes things very nice in the family. We see this, of course, in the Ramayana, when Rama is told by Dasharatha. Although Dasharatha, the last thing he wants to tell Rama is to go to the forest. It's quite ironic. He really, really doesn't want to tell Rama to go to the forest. But he has to tell Rama to go to the forest. Why? Because he promised Kaikeyi two promises, and now he has to keep them. And now he's cornered. So he makes this order, and Rama, he would have loved it if Rama had said, Dad, I don't know what's gone into you, but this is not an order that I can follow. But he doesn't. He says, yes, Father, I accept. He accepted entirely the order. He accepted it as the right thing to do. He accepted it joyfully, and he was ready to go to the forest the next day. This brings us to this theme that was so nicely discussed by Radhika Raman Prabhu yesterday, this tension between renunciation on one side and non-renunciation, Grihastha Ashram in particular, on the other side. It's a kind of opposition, and yet what we see in this particular pastime is, in this discussion from Lord Brahma, is that he wants Priyavrata to become genuinely renounced. And part of that process for him to become genuinely renounced is for him to renounce his will. He has his personal will to be renounced, and now his grandfather is saying, no, you should take up this duty. So his first step in renunciation is the most crucial, and that is to renounce his own will for the sake of the superior will of, in this case, Lord Brahma. And of course, that's our lesson in general, to surrender to the will of the Lord. The Lord himself, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks in Chaitanya Charitamrita to Bhavananda Raya, he's being introduced to several devotees, and one of them is Bhavananda, the father of Ramananda Rai, and he says to him, Nijagriha Vitta Britya Pancha Putrasane Atma Samarpilun Amitomar Charane. He says, Basically, that I appreciate such a person as you, who are giving yourself and your five sons to the Lord. You are surrendering atma samarpilun. The anushasana doesn't appear in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but this atma samarpilun. You are surrendering yourself together with all of your your five sons, who of course are none other than the five Pandavas. And he is, who? Bhavananda is, yes, Pandu, and that makes his wife Kunti, yes. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to this verse that if you can surrender to the Lord with your whole family, then there is no need of sannyas. I think Prabhupada was kind of seeing his own situation. In this case, he saw that his family members were not interested, and so he decided, I will take sannyas. But he's making that point. If the whole family says, let's go, let's surrender to Krishna, then no need. Or, to put another way, sannyas is already there in spirit. The spirit of sannyas, the substance of sannyas, is already there. You are giving everything. Grihe tako vane tako. No. What's the verse I want? Manasa deha geha yoki chumor arpilum tua pade nanda kishore. Oh, nanda kishore dua pade. Not to a dua padi. O Nanda Kishore, I offer everything to your two feet, my body, myself, and my family. Everything is yours. A little footnote, finally, to this idea of sannyas. I find interesting that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that there is an ashram for each of the yugas. Satya Yuga is the yuga to be a brahmachari. Treta Yuga is the yuga to be a grihastha. Dwapara Yuga is the yuga to be a vanaprastha. And Kali Yuga is the yuga to be a sannyasi. Yes, actually we should all take sannyas in this age. Sannyasis get all the maha prasad. So there you go. That's the reason to do it. Grantharaj Shiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Any questions, comments, complaints? It's forbidden. You got me. You have to ask Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. I don't know if he gives any further explanation to that. I read that in the biography of Bhakti from Bhakti Vikas Swami. I found it intriguing that he says that. Of course, we understand sannyas for the age of Kali means Vaishnava sannyas, Tridanda sannyas, and that means giving everything to Krishna, as opposed to sort of mundane sannyas, which is renunciation without necessarily surrendering to the Lord. Yes. Other points? Yes. Non-defiant. Yes. For everything, should we be non-defiant of everything? Should we become like, there's a saying in Bengal, if you're too humble, even if you're too humble, the goats will eat you. Where's Vrindavan from? He could tell us in Bengali, that's the saying. No, it doesn't mean allowing oneself to be taken advantage of. Surrender to the Lord is surrender to the actual Lord, who is absolutely not interested in taking advantage of you in some oppressive way. That's the material world, where we are all trying to take advantage of each other. We are trying to, get something from others. And we are telling others, you should surrender to me. Our program is surrender to Krishna. And in this way, become free from any kind of oppression. So if our determination is that, then Krishna will make arrangements so that we need not submit to something which is not appropriate, not helpful in our spiritual life. Isn't it? If our focus is I want to surrender to Krishna. Now, if our focus is not I want to surrender to Krishna, then all kinds of forms of material energy will be there inviting us to surrender to them, and then we'll have to be resistant to so many things and so many persons. But if our aim is clear, if we are clear within ourselves what it is we want, then all of that backs off. Maya backs off. Maya recedes. Maya is embarrassed. How does that verse go? Vilajjamanaya yasya statum ikshapate muya. Maya is embarrassed to be in the presence of the Lord. So if Maya sees we want to surrender to Krishna, she backs off. Yeah. Yes. I think I was talking about a kick from Krishna, not from Maya. But what's the question? Krishna's kick. How does Krishna's kick feel? We understand that Krishna's lotus feet are very soft, isn't it? So then, if we are being kicked by Krishna, there will be a certain softness to it. Whereas the kick of Maya, will be very hard. Isn't it? There's a softness. There's an invitation in Krishna's kick. Sometimes, if you're not careful, you're walking along, you stub your toe, and you realize, oh, I wasn't being very careful. So it's a gentle reminder from Krishna to be careful. And you have that experience. You realize at the first moment, oh, ouch, but then you realize, oh, this was actually a gentle reminder from Krishna to be careful. I don't know. There's lots of different sorts of kicks, I suppose, from the Lord. But the general theme of Krishna's kick is it's a wake-up, isn't it? Wake-up. Jeev Jago. So we want to respond to that by doing what? Waking up. Yeah. Prabhupada says, first be conscious, then Krishna conscious. Yeah. Wake up. Yes. On riding crocodiles? He's an Avaduta. Avadutas, I suppose they can ride on crocodiles if they want to. Is that in this book, Nityananda Charita? Because that's, I should mention, a somewhat apocryphal book, as far as I know, isn't it? Yeah. You know what apocryphal is? It's not necessarily authorized. It's questioned whether it was actually authored by, what do they say, Vrindavan Das Thakur? In any case, it's doubtful. There's some question whether that's true. That said, we understand the Lord can do anything he wants. He's all powerful. He can do amazing things if he wants to ride. But your question is, why does he do these things? It's shocking. Yes, the Lord is not subject to our preconceptions of what he can and cannot or should and should not do. So this is one thing the Lord does, is surprise his devotees. Imagine there would be no surprise. After some time it might get boring, but the spiritual world is nava-nava-rasa. It is always fresh. So there's, and the Lord appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his associates specifically to have an even more fun time than he and his associates have in Vrindavan. I mean, that's hard to imagine, but it's even more fun for Lord Chaitanya to come to Navadvip and to have these pastimes with his devotees, and specifically to expand the sphere of transcendental enjoyment by performing sankirtana. So he's doing all of this really as part of his sport of enjoying sankirtan with his devotees. So one might say, why does he do these things? One might also then turn around and at least rhetorically ask, why not? Yes. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Grantaraj Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jai. Gaura Prema Ānande.